friends and enemies gather around. It is time for Perhaps It's You, your very ultimate favorite Unsolved Mysteries rewatch podcast. I'm Liz.
And I'm Samantha.
We're trying to hang in there. And these end times. We hope that you are also hanging in there, five listeners. We make this podcast for you. We don't, you know what? It's not for BD Wong anymore. I'm just going to, it's for the five.
It's primarily for the five.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not an all or nothing game. You're so right, Samantha. Also, I'd like to assume that BD Wong is part of the five, because so every so often he likes an Instagram thing that's like literally about him. So it's like, oh, obviously he's listening. He doesn't have an intern that just like likes positive stuff about him. He's obviously sitting down, getting like real cozy, cuddling up with a hot chocolate, like, ooh, it's time to listen to a new Perhaps It's You. That's him.
Yes, yes.
Ah, what a beautiful scene. How are you? How's Alfie?
Alfie is good. It's very nice out in Minnesota today. It's like 45 degrees, so everybody is enjoying that. Alfie included, myself included, when I have to go out and see him.
Yeah, we recovered from that cold snap, and maybe we're not really going to have a winter. I don't know.
Maybe winter's over now. I mean,
it's probably a really bad sign for the state of the earth, but hey.
I mean, probably, but, you know, we have so little. We might as well enjoy.
Exactly. You got to, like, you got to pick up those little, I don't know, diamonds and the shards of glass or something, something.
Yeah. You sent me the link to our, I kind of lost track of what I was doing today because I was making a salad and watching the Murda hearing. I
don't know if you've been
following the fallout after the trial.
Murda, I have not. Tell me.
See if he, well, okay, so I haven't really been closely watching it. I mean, I've been like tangentially aware of what's been going on with the appeals and allegations and et cetera, and the efforts by obviously his team to get him a new trial, but there's a big hearing today where they were interviewing jurors. Apparently, there is an allegation that it's actually wild. So the clerk of courts for the original trial is a woman who seems like generally a busybody. She was on the stand today, and you can kind of just tell. But she wrote a book about the Murda trial, like immediately after. And there's like, I don't know enough about the system to know if she could be held like in contempt or if like any of this is illegal, but it's definitely a bad look. She's apparently in this book, she's writing about believing that he's guilty and making eye contact with jurors and having knowing looks with jurors.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I guess
knowing looks. The true evidence. Finally.
Well, the allegation is that she influenced the jurors, right? And so in her book, she's saying that she like made eye contact with jurors and like implying that like they were on the same page. And she says straight up that she had conversations, not with jurors, but with like bailiffs and court reporters about how she believed he was guilty. And then jurors have made allegations that she said things either to them or in their presence about like implying that he was guilty and that his defense team would try and be sneaky and like all kinds of things. And of course she's denying saying that, but like she definitely does not come off as credible, and you can really tell that the judge is, I think, questioning her credibility. They're like, as we speak, they're bringing forth some witnesses that they weren't originally going to allow based on just like her testimony alone, because it seems like she can't really keep her story straight, and she's not coming off as very credible. And honestly, like making a book immediately after, and I guess she said on the stand that she made like $100,000 off this book, and she had to pull it because apparently there's whole sections of it that are plagiarized from some other author. That's a whole other thing I don't know about. But so she's not even selling it anymore, and she still made $100,000. She has a co-author, so I guess she split that, but like that's a lot of money. You know, and it makes you wonder, like, was she invested in a guilty verdict because she thought that, I mean, I think that's what the defense is alleging, that she, you know, was invested in him being found guilty because she thought it would help her book sales. Now, of course, the prosecution is trying not to get him a new trial because they got the outcome they wanted. He's serving life in prison at the moment. But it's very interesting and honestly just wild.
Not a good look. Very tacky.
Very bad. Very bad. Yeah, not good. So if you're watching that, I mean, it's crazy. And the you can like live stream it on YouTube. So I was just like, while I was working today, I had it on the background and they're interviewing jurors and some of the jurors are saying like they felt pressured to vote guilty. And it's just, it's wild. I would just wonder if he's, I mean, the trial was like 6 weeks long. It was completely bananas. And now to think that there might be a new trial, who knows? But that's obviously what's at stake.
Good luck pressuring me if I'm on your jury. I would take that shit so seriously.
Oh, I would too. I mean, I would like another jury, but like
I would absolutely be fighting to the last second for whatever it was that I believed. So yeah. Good luck. Good luck thinking you're going to make a knowing eye contact with me and I'll like change my vote. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I will be this is a man's. I'm going to be standing up giving monologues like, the law has fallen down to the 12 of us, and it comes today for us to look deep within our conscience, you know, and people be like, yep. Oh my God, shut up, bitch. We just want to go home. And I'll be like, no, nothing could be more important than the task given us before us.
No, I agree completely. I want to be on a jury so bad, but I just know I probably never will be, which is too bad. But
I know.
Anyway, that was just what was on my mind.
Because we're such busybodies. We're just like, hey, can we just like be on the jury to like know what's like going on? Like, what's up?
I recently was actually thinking that like, had I known that like court reporting was a career path, I would totally be interested in being a court reporter and just like hearing all the gossip, like, you know, sitting in the courtroom and listening to everybody's messy drama. I just think that would be a really interesting career.
how is your typing skills? Mine are terrible.
I type pretty good. I don't know like my words per minute, but I type well.
Okay. Maybe this, I mean,
but it's totally different. Like, I think a stenography machine is like completely different. It's a completely different skill than typing. I think you could be a bad typer. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, perhaps zupodcast@gmail.com. But I think it's a total, like, you type phonetically and you use like just, I think like 5 or 6 keys. So it's like a completely different, I don't know that you have to be good at typing to be a good,
I assumed that skill would be transferable, but you're putting me in
maybe mind. It is. I mean, it probably doesn't hurt, but I'm sure like it's, I'm sure it's so different that you could probably
look,
master
maybe,
one and not the
you
other.
Know, your life's not over. Maybe this will be a new chapter for you at some point.
You know, maybe
the court reporter,
probably not, but maybe
the court reporter/gossip.
Yeah, yeah.
Hanging out of the courthouse, getting everybody's business. God, I love this for you.
I just think it would be a fun career. I don't know if you're listening and you are a court reporter, or a stenographer, if you, I don't know, do depositions or whatever. Like, I just think that'd be really fun.
Ooh.
Probably it's not. Probably it's really boring, like 99% of the time. But
yeah,
in my mind, I imagine that it's just really juicy.
Can I be one of the artists when they don't let the camera in the courtroom that has to do like the weird sketches?
Yeah, you should.
If anybody needs that done, could you like hire me to do that? Go to the courtroom and like make the sketch? Yeah, I have no idea. That seems fun to me. Because then you get to like, you kind of like can tell how the artist is leaning just by like the way they depict people.
They have a point of view. Yeah.
So you're like, they made this person look really mad on the stand, or they like made them look really guilty, or like, why did they like really highlight that they have green undertones under their eyes? Like,
that's they make like a murderer really, really sexy.
Yeah. You can totally kind of tell like, how I can see how they feel about this.
It's really, that's really interesting to me.
All right, so we do have an episode.
I do have some updates.
Ooh, okay.
I have a couple updates before we get to it. So you may be aware that Google Podcast is going away. If you're an Android user, if that's the platform you use, you probably are already aware of it. It was a little off my radar because we are an iPhone household. I knew about it, and I actually had looked into it previously. But, and I'm sure no one cares about this peek behind the curtain, but I'm just going to explain why I haven't gotten to it yet, which is that, so the replacement for Google Podcasts is YouTube Music. And in order to get your podcast onto YouTube Music, you have to be verified. So you have to like verify your identity. And if you don't have a, like, video feed. So if you don't have video history, like video uploads associated with your account, which we don't record videos. We're strict. We don't record this podcast. We're strictly audio. Then you have to either submit your government ID, like a photo of it, or you have to film a video of your face and upload it. Yeah, those are your two options.
This is so creepy.
It's very creepy, and I don't really trust Google with either of those things. But those are your options if you want to be on YouTube Music, or you have to like build a video history, like a video upload history. Those are your three options. So obviously one of them is out the window. We're not going to ever have a recording of this podcast, a video recording.
No. Mm-mm.
So I had kind of just like immediately was like, oh, I'll deal with this later. Well, I think it's either March or April when Google Podcast is officially going away. People have mentioned it in our Facebook group. So I did it. I uploaded a video of my face yesterday to verify that
that's so nice of you.
That I'm like old enough or whatever. I'm sure that's going directly to the government. Whatever, I'm already on, I'm sure, plenty of watch lists, but I don't know how long it's going to take for them to do the verification. Hopefully they approve it. I don't know if it's denied. I don't know what to tell you. We're just not going to be on YouTube Music. But assuming that they approve it, and I think it does take like 24 to 48 hours, I will do the steps to get our RSS feed on YouTube Music. Now, I do believe you can like import RSS feeds into your, I don't know how it works, but I think you can import your own RSS feeds into YouTube Music if you use it. I don't know how that works, and I've heard from at least one person that not everything like comes over. So you might miss out. I saw on Reddit that some people are recommending Pocket Casts if you're looking for an alternative to Google Music or Google Podcasts or whatever. A lot of people are recommending Pocket Casts. Obviously I'll remind you that we are on Spotify, and then obviously Apple Podcasts, but that doesn't really help you if you're an Android user. So, I will update you if and when we get onto YouTube Music. Once you're verified, I think it's literally just copying and pasting your RSS feeds. I don't think it's very hard on my end. So, you know, fingers crossed they accept that I am who I say I am and they allow us to be on YouTube Music. I think it's just going to go away if you use Google Podcasts in, I don't know, sometime this spring.
How annoying.
Quite annoying. Because honestly, I don't know if they changed the process since we first started, but getting our podcast onto Google Podcasts was so difficult. Maybe it wasn't for, maybe some people understand these things better than I do, but I remember it being very complicated. Like Apple Podcasts was a piece of cake. You literally just copy and paste your RSS feed. Google had like coding. It was like bizarre how complicated it was. And it was a triumph when I was able to do that. And now all of it's for naught because it's going away. But YouTube Music is a lot easier. It's much more like Apple was, where you just copy and paste it in. So hopefully that all works out. My second update is a very minor update. Maybe I should save this for the found love. I don't know. I talked about in my found loves last episode about wanting a walking tracking app that is like real life trails, and it's apparent that I did zero Googling to see if that was a thing that exists, because it is a thing that exists. There is, and I think several listeners,
people had a lot of recommendations for you.
The first person to mention this app was Amelia in our podcast Facebook group, and then Lucy also mentioned it. And it is the app Walk the Distance. And I'm currently on there. I'm walking the Appalachian Trail. I actually got a notification today that I have completed 1% of the Appalachian Trail. So that's cool. Apparently, if you walk 15 miles a day, you will complete the Appalachian Trail in 5 months. So I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life.
I had no idea it was so long.
I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life, but I am currently on the first leg of the Appalachian Trail, and you can friend people. So if you're interested in being my friend on the app, I don't know that there's like a lot you can't interact with people, but you can like see where they're at, and you can set notifications. So like if you pass them or if they pass you, you'll be notified. So you can kind of like see where they are. I don't walk a ton. I walk maybe like at most 5 miles a day. Usually it's less than that. So I'm not going to be speedy.
Samantha.
I'm not going to be, I suppose it's not nothing, but it's not 15 miles a day. So if you'll probably catch up to me quickly if you're a walker and you want to do the first, there's other trails in there. It's very cool.
Can you join me on the, Can I walk by and shove you? Like shove you in a ravine?
That would be a hilarious thing to introduce to the app. A hilarious feature. You could like taunt people or cheer them on or something. Moon them. Yeah. No, I mean, you can pretend, but it's not a feature in the app. The only thing I wish it had was like, the interface, it's very simple to use. It's very easy. I like that you can see your progress on the trail. You can see where other people are. The only thing I don't like is I wish, like, it's the Google Maps map. Like, it's the illustrated map or whatever. It's like not the real satellite image. I sort of wish you had an option to switch to the satellite image, because I sort of want to see like what would I be seeing if I was on the Appalachian Trail right at this place, in this spot. Like, I sort of wish you could do that, but there's no way. So all you get is like the Google Maps map, which is fine, but I sort of wish it was a little bit more interesting. You do see like landmarks along the way. There's like little, you can kind of look at the map and see, oh, I'm at this rest area. They have little factoids about the Appalachian Trail. It's very cool. So I appreciate the folks that brought it to my attention, because I'm enjoying it a lot. So
how much of that 1% of the trail did you spend yelling gonker?
Oh, 100%. Gonker. 1%. Yeah, okay, you can just imagine. I should change my name to Gonker in the. But it's actually just my regular name, so you can find me.
No, and, it should be Gonker.
You know, post in the Facebook group if you're in the Facebook group. If you are gonna join me on my walk across the Appalachian Trail to find Gonker / Outrun Roblo.
I'm gonna find you, but it's to trip you.
That's fair. That's fair.
Is it?
It'll be motivation for me to like keep going so I can outrun you.
It sounds
and not
extremely
get tripped.
Unfair, but okay.
Well, it's in the app. I'll be fine.
You're
I'm not gonna fall off the cliff.
You're like, yeah, come trip me, whatever.
Sure. I think that's fun.
Okay. We have to talk about season 8, episode 12 today.
This is a paranormal unexplained phenomenon. This is the Haunted Comedy Store in West Hollywood, California. Have you ever been there?
No.
I was wondering if any of our listeners have ever been there and if they saw a ghost.
Yeah, if you did see a ghost of the Comedy Store, write in. We want to know.
You should tell us. Okay, so the Comedy Store is located in a 3-story building on Sunset Strip in Hollywood, California. Shows are held in the original showroom, which is called creatively the original room.
Wow.
And the much larger main showroom, also creatively called the main room. The showrooms have backstage dressing rooms. There's a basement storage area below the stage and the first floor. There is also a kitchen and an annex off the kitchen.
It's a really big comedy club.
Yeah, it is.
Like, well, usually comedy clubs are sort of a bar and then like an awkward room.
But and I think that's like, why they set the scene, because if you're talking about a haunted place, like how many places could these ghosts be if it's just literally a stage? Like, I'm picturing the local comedy club, you know, whatever, where it's like a stage and like a shitty bar. But this place is very complex and there's a lot of like offices and a kitchen and a green room and everything else. There's also like a secondary venue called the Belly Room, which is located on the second floor.
I don't like that. Why?
Yeah,
is
we
it
don't get a lot
that?
Of. I don't know, and they don't tell us, and I'm not that interested in learning.
Yeah.
So,
same.
The Comedy Store is a famous nightclub located on Hollywood Sunset Strip. For decades, it has played host to legendary comedians, film and television stars. We get some name drops like Jim Carrey, Roseanne Barr, Jay Leno, Arsenio Hall, etc. Big names that you would recognize have performed at the Comedy Store. Several of the folks that I mentioned got their big break while delivering comedy stand-up sets to delighted fans, is what Robert Stack says.
I mean, obviously, it's just like a big venue because industry people will see you and learn you're funny and whatever.
Right. But some say the best show takes center stage when the crowd goes home and there is hardly a living soul around.
Only Robert Stack would say that that's when the real show starts.
Well, he's gotta, because it's Unsolved Mysteries.
But that's because he's staying after close to hit on waitresses. That has nothing to do with ghosts.
That might be it. So according to many employees, past and present, the club's hallowed halls are haunted. We hear from author Lori Jacobson, who once worked there as a waitress. She collected stories for a book about ghosts and Hollywood titled Hollywood Haunted.
That sounds
she says, It does. She says that the club is haunted from the basement to the rafters. When she was working there, the waitresses would have to set up the main showroom by putting tablecloths and ashtrays on every table. It would take them like an hour to set this entire thing up. They would leave, they would come back in, and it would be completely all put away. So these so ghosts annoying. Are huge dicks.
You know, this is some male comedian that thinks it's really funny to fuck with people and ruin their work. Like, no, that's not funny. Get out of that's the comedy store. Quit. If I spent an hour dealing with tablecloths and then I came back in a room and they were all like crumpled up in a corner, I'd be calling the Ghostbusters that very second. No.
Yes. Yeah. Terrible. So the in these cases, the tablecloths would be like refolded and stacked neatly. The ashtrays would be stacked. Lori says that she and the other waitresses knew exactly what they were dealing with there, and it was ghosts.
Or it was just like some fuck that works there. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like that's maybe more likely, but it's just weird that no one ever like claimed responsibility. At least not they mentioned in the show.
It also seems like it happens very quickly. Like it's something that takes an hour to set up, but somehow is being like neatly.
That's what I wondered is what was the timeline? Yeah. Because I can't imagine they're taking an hour to set this up and then like nobody goes back in there for like another hour.
Right.
So yeah, it must be in the blink of an eye. Comedian Joey Gaynor also has experiences at the club. He says what happened was not a figment of his imagination. Thank you very much. And he was also neither drunk nor high. So
I think this is the blue collar comedy tour guy. He has like an impressive white person flat top in this shot and a mustache, which I guess I'm just calling.
He was a blue collar comedy guy.
Yeah, I mean, he looks much older now. He doesn't have a mustache. He looks very different. But okay. I think that's who this is. We definitely hear from him. I guess I'm just calling his mustache Blue Collar Comedy Tour, which, man, sure. that's an insult right there.
Sure.
This guy, he was on, like, every sitcom in the 90s. Like, he would be the guy that just, like, was Tim Allen's friend on Home Improvement or something. He was just always, like, that dude. I don't know. He's always the same. Kind of annoying, and apparently saw a bunch of ghosts.
Apparently he got hit on the head with something, so there's that. He says it is easy to know once you see something unexplained, you believe it. So when he was just starting out, he worked as a doorman at the club. Most nights he was the last one out of the building, or so he thought.
Well, ghosts one don't count, so like they're not counting the attendance of ghosts on their like little right. Like hand clicker thing for attendance. They don't go, oh, and a ghost, right? So
maybe they should, but no, they do not.
They have a separate clicker for that. It's like it glows in the dark. It's like a little bit clear.
Yeah,
ghost tracker.
So at about 3 a.m. one morning, Joey was alone in the club and began locking up. He went into the showroom and grabbed his coat. As he was walking to leave, he noticed two lit candles on a table. He blew them out and started walking towards the exit. When he turned around a few seconds later, he noticed that the candles were lit again. He went back to the table and blew them out again. He figured they were still a bit lit when he blew them out the first time. But then it happened again. As he started walking down the stairs, he noticed that the air felt freezing cold. He turned around and the candles were lit again. To which he said, okay, stay lit. Goodbye. And he left.
He was like, I don't care if this place burns down.
You think he would like go like dip them in some water or something?
He can't figure that out. Okay, so there was an item when I was a child that I swear they don't sell anymore, which were these trick birthday candles that you would like.
Oh, sell those again.
I wonder.
Those are fun.
I wonder if they like caused fires.
Maybe.
But you would like blow them out and they would, yeah, relight.
So yeah.
I
remember those.
I kind of wonder if someone was playing a prank on him.
But I feel like the fact that it's a haunted comedy club does bring some of these things into question because they could just be pranks. You know, and pranks in a comedy club make sense. So I feel like there is some plausible deniability. You know, that these are actually ghosts.
I mean, you can get some relighting birthday candles on Amazon right now, so.
Oh, okay.
If you want to make your kids frustrated, they exist. I don't know if they're safe, but they do exist.
So anyway, maybe it was a trick candle. It's very possible.
I would play a trick on that guy. That would amuse me. I would like to prank this dude.
Well, maybe the ghosts feel the same way you do, because Robert Stack says it seems that the club's spirits just love to play games with Joey.
I just feel like he's kind of smug, and it would amuse me if he really thought like a ghost was coming for him, but it was just me. It was just me pranking him.
Yeah.
In general, I'm not a prankster at all. I don't find that like fun. I don't think people I know would find that fun. Like, yeah. I don't think that anyone that was picked on as a kid is like looking to be pranked. I'll just say that. I don't know that he would find that fun. But to someone like this guy, there's something tempting about taking him down a peg.
Yeah. No, I agree. And on another night, he went to shut off the lights in the building, which were located behind the stage. About 5 seconds later, he returned to the main showroom and found a bunch of chairs piled up on top of each other in the middle of the aisle. He never heard anyone come in, nor did he hear the chairs moving. He does not believe that someone could have come in and done that during the 5 second period that he was away.
That was also me. What if I could explain every single one of these? That I was like somehow so knowledgeable about the comedy store.
It was just you.
That I'm just like, oh yeah, that was that intern, Kyle. He would do that.
I mean, that would be amazing. especially if they were like super elaborate.
Yeah.
And then nobody took responsibility for it. And like their end game was just getting on Unsolved Mysteries.
The best end game. It's like, yeah, I just wanted Robert Stack to come to the comedy store and see my set.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought he might not come for the comedy, but he would come for the ghosts. Honestly, smart.
So another former doorman at the club, who was comedian Blake Clark, says that he too was the target of the club's disembodied pranksters. Prior to working there.
What a phrase. That's something from like the Boxcar Children or like
disembodied pranksters.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something it's very like
interesting turn of phrase.
Like a kid's first chapter book about that.
Yeah.
That turn of phrase.
So he did not believe in ghosts before working at the comedy store. One night, he came to the main showroom to lock it up when he heard a noise. He looked over to the stage and saw a bar stool being spun around and dragged about 20 feet. He says it was clearly not an earthquake, wind, or a person that could have caused the stool to move. It had to have been supernatural, and as of yet, he has not been able to explain it.
Okay, but what if it was a bunch of ants? You know how ants can pick up like way more than their body weight? They're like,
how many ants would it take to drag a stool 20 feet?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but someone can figure it out.
I was thinking of like a string or a fishing line, maybe.
My brain immediately went, I bet no one looked into ants.
I mean, I think that's correct. I don't think anyone has looked into ants. I could be wrong, but
I don't know, Samantha. I'm not some sort of ant scientist, but I'm going to put out a new hypothesis, and it's up to other people to prove that hypothesis wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. The burden of proof isn't on you.
No.
To prove it wasn't ants.
A mere so another night.
Another night, Blake was getting ready to leave when he heard someone banging on the piano keys in the belly room. He rushed upstairs thinking that someone was locked in there. As soon as he unlocked the door, the noise stopped. Once he was inside, it was clear that no one else was in there. As he turned to leave, he heard it again. He looked at the piano, but no one was there. He claims to have also witnessed one of Joey's misadventures with the supernatural. One night, both of them were working the main stage area when Joey mentioned how a lot of strange stuff was going on there that week. Blake told him to quit antagonizing, quote, them, being the ghosts. And Joey responds by saying, hey, come out. Come out, ghosts. Show yourself. Where are you?
Hey, come out, ghosts.
Yeah, come on, ghosts. Show yourselves.
Why wouldn't that work? They should then like erupt into song and dance, I think. Ghosts, show yourselves. I mean, and they're like, ba da ba da ba, ba da 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 ba. And then the ghosts come out on the stage and there's like a big review, you know, like the curtains part.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Allegedly, it did work because moments later, an ashtray lifted up from a nearby table, floated several feet in the air, and then flung at Joey.
You know, since we've stopped smoking indoors largely as a country, it's given ghosts less things to do.
Less projectiles, yeah.
It's kind of put ghosts out of work. Is that all right? Are we okay with that?
I mean,
apparently,
I'm not, but
apparently,
I have a few people in mind that ghosts could throw ashtrays at, but well, they'll never get a chance. So Joey ducked, and the ashtray struck the wall behind him and shattered. I don't know why that was difficult for me to say. Joey thought that Blake threw the ashtray at him, but Blake told him that it came from the other part of the room. It's then that they realized that a ghost had to have thrown it at them.
Because there's no way that guy just lied.
It seems like the ghosts also like to watch the shows and give their opinions on them.
Mm-hmm.
One night, Sam Kinison was performing on stage in the original showroom. Blake says that Sam's routine continued. He heard voices in the room he was in. The voices got louder and louder, angrily. Okay,
that's just heckling, guy. That's not ghosts. Those are just patrons at the Comedy Store that did not like your act.
The ghosts heckled some of the comedians. Yes, that is correct.
No, I think those were just normal people, and they want to blame it on ghosts. They're like, yeah, I've seen ghosts there. Why else would I get heckled and booed? If I hear a boo, it's definitely a ghost, not someone hearing my joke and going, boo, right?
Yeah.
I think I figured this whole thing out. It's just comedians not accepting that people don't think they're funny. And they're blaming
you know, honestly.
I think I'm onto something.
So, skipping ahead a little bit, why is the Comedy Store allegedly haunted?
Well,
so,
the ghosts are comedy fans, for one, so they want to see fresh material.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about where you want to spend eternity, maybe a comedy club might, you know, it's not where I would go, but like some people might if you really like comedy. So, allegedly, there was a killing and torture room in the basement where mobsters would like torture people they didn't like.
Okay. Sure.
There are rumors that bodies are buried in the basement as well. Allegedly, at one point, there was also an abortion clinic in the basement. Was this in the show?
Why? No, I don't. I think I would remember if Robert Stack was like, and also I would go bring my mistresses to the Comedy Store so they could get quick abortions. Yeah,
some mysteries wiki is claiming that a girlfriend of a mobster died in an abortion gone wrong in the basement.
Okay. Sorry to her.
Wild. Wild. I'm literally reading off the Unsolved Mysteries wiki because I had a mix-up about what mysteries I was gonna cover today. That's why this is kind of chaotic. And whoever wrote this Unsolved Mysteries wiki, I think, took some liberties with the summary.
They have their own research, their own information.
Okay, do you want to hear about some investigations that have gone on at the Comedy Store?
I mean, I guess.
In 1982, Barry Taff and his UCLA parapsychology team came to investigate the Comedy Store. When they got to the backstage area, two coins fell from the ceiling. When they entered the basement, Taff says he was overcome by agonizing pain in his legs. He believes it was from a ghost whose knees and legs were broken by the mob.
Stop.
I don't know why he would think that.
Based on what?
Based on the fact that his legs hurt. No, he wasn't having a blood clot.
My legs hurt too.
Are you being haunted by the ghost of someone who's was kneecapped by the mob?
Probably. It's the only logical explanation. I once failed to blow out a candle. So think about that.
In 1994, during the taping of the Haunted Hollywood series, Taff reported seeing three men all dressed in 1940s style suits in the back of the main showroom.
Are we ignoring how much comedians drink?
Maybe that's it.
Blog,
maybe that's
blog.
So there is a Ghost Adventures about the Comedy Store, which I do think I've seen, but I don't remember anything about it. So you can watch that. Haunted Hollywood, obviously. Well, anyway, surprise, surprise, that's unsolved. So
what? We don't know for sure if there's ghosts at the Comedy Store?
I mean, watch the episode of Ghost Adventures and decide for yourself.
Yeah, keep an open mind, you know, just like analyze all that evidence and
yeah.
Maybe go to the Comedy Store yourself, become a really successful stand-up comic, and then see if there's any ghosts there. That would be one avenue.
That's one way.
Get into comedy, humiliate yourself on a regular basis for laughs, and then see if you see any ghosts along the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now it's time for a lost love. This one is for the Sweetie Pies. This one, it's sad, but it's sweet. Okay. So this is the story of 16-year-old Wendy Radcliffe, who had a very close relationship with her grandmother, Bernice Gardner. Especially after her parents divorced, she stayed with her grandmother a lot, and she considered her, quote, safety net. Christmas time, 1984, they went on a road trip together in Oregon. They like drove to Oregon, and then they were on December 30th, we're heading back home to Southern California when the car overheated, which used to be a way more common problem. So they stopped across the street from a restaurant in Modesto to like get car help, get something to eat, whatever. Wendy calls her mom from the payphone to say, hey, look, we're going to have to spend the night in Modesto because of car trouble. You know, I'm not going to be home till tomorrow, so don't expect me. But after getting off the phone, they decide to go across the street and eat at the restaurant there. Wendy makes it across the street, but a car hits Bernice.
Yeah.
It's very sad. And I don't know. Don't drive so recklessly that you hit elderly ladies when they're crossing the street.
I know.
So anyway, Wendy had to like run into the restaurant to get someone to call for help. And when she came back to the scene of the accident, the like EMT people or the people that were already there didn't understand that she was related to Bernice. They just thought she was like some woman who was hysterical, like just some random passerby. So they were kind of not letting her like touch her grandma or be close to her grandma. They were keeping her away, and they probably thought she was nuts. And they weren't understanding that that was her grandmother.
But yeah,
the stranger came up to her and like hugged her and consoled her and like told her that everything was going to be okay, because keep in mind, Wendy's only 16 years old. She's not like really an adult. So this like maternal lovely woman is like, you know, it's okay, and like your help is coming for your grandmother and whatever. And then Wendy had to go to the hospital by herself as a 16 year old while like her grandmother is getting surgery for her injuries. And while she's just sitting there in the waiting area, which Stat called that she was adrift in a living nightmare.
Okay,
a little dramatic, but she's in the waiting room. She doesn't know what's happening with her grandmother, and that strange woman is back, and she was like, I just realized you were going to be here by yourself, and I felt so bad, and so I came to like check on you and see how you were doing, because she understands that like this is a minor and she doesn't have any other family in town, and like
right,
the only person she knows is potentially dying, so like what is she supposed to do? So she's there to like comfort there. A few minutes later, a nurse came and told them that Bernice's condition was stable and that she could go see her. But when Wendy and this woman went to the floor to talk to the doctor was like, well, I don't know why they told you that, I'm so sorry, but she passed away. So she had this like, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes of like getting on the elevator, going up to see her, like thinking like, oh, I can talk to my grandmother and like everything's going to be all right. And then it's like, oh no, what? That nurse just didn't want to tell you she's dead.
Horrible. I'm so glad that this Good Samaritan was with her.
I know, because this is such an overwhelming situation for someone that's a teenager, and she shouldn't have to deal with that on her own.
No.
And it doesn't seem like the hospital staff were really, look, maybe they were totally overwhelmed. Maybe there's like a lot of stuff going on that night. The hospitals seem like they're permanently understaffed, but to be like telling her that she's fine and then be like, oh, she's dead. Not helpful. Not helpful. You're not helping this person with this horrible situation. So, she was just like crying and crying, and this woman was holding her, and she doesn't even really remember what happened after that because it was such a shock. And the woman stayed until Wendy's family was able to get there to pick her up. And then she just, you know, she just peaced out and left the family to grieve. But she later realized that if that woman hadn't been there, like it would have been so much harder for her. And she really did need that support at that time, even though she does no idea who that woman was. And you know, maybe she like learned her name or something, but because so much was going on, like she doesn't remember. She also wanted this woman to know that she had moved on with her life. Well, I don't know, moved on is the right word, but whatever. She had grown up. She had gotten married. She had had children. Like, she had gone on to like, you know, do things. She wanted this woman to be aware of. And she thought of her as sort of her guardian angel for helping her through this horrible time. And so she just wanted her to know that she changed her life, which is so sweet. So don't worry, because on the night of the broadcast, that woman who is named Karen Barnes called the tennis center and identified herself as the Good Samaritan. They spoke over the phone and Wendy was able to thank her. And Karen told her that like, oh, like I've thought of you too, and I've wondered how your family is coping, and like, you know, it's just such a like horrible sudden thing to happen. And they actually got to meet up later and like, you know, be thanked in person. So that's really sweet. I appreciate that. Good job on Unsolved Mysteries. And now we get this like super long, unnecessary update about the Germans and Americans having dinner together on Christmas. And you just sit there going, I know, the whole time. So then that happens. And then it's Samantha's turn again.
Yeah, this is a wanted, and it's the New York serial rapist.
I totally blocked this all out because it's just terrible.
So for more than 20 years, a cunning serial rapist has prowled Buffalo, New York, and its suburbs. A female victim who has chosen to have her identity concealed in the show recalled the horrific events of her attack. I will summarize. She was 17 years old and walking home from summer school when she was basically attacked and snatched and drug into the bushes. She definitely thought she was going to die. She describes thinking that she would never see her family again.
So fucking sad.
When he was done attacking her, she asked what is going to happen. And apparently, according to her, he said nothing and almost sounded sorry. And then he left.
She was definitely like, are you going to kill me?
Right. Like,
what is...
thinking he would, for sure.
Like, nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna go on being a piece of shit wherever I go.
It's just interesting because this is one of his first victims, and it seems like at that time at least he felt some perhaps remorse for what he was doing, but then he continued to escalate. Robert Stack says that the reign of terror had only just begun. A few months later, in June of 1988, the rapist was lying in wait as a 16-year-old girl walked to school along an isolated railroad track.
This is horrible. We can't do anything. We can't leave the house. We can't walk anywhere. We can't, like...
You're just walking to school. Like,
I hate this.
Something that every kid should be able to do. We hear from a lieutenant, P.W. Reining of the Buffalo Police Department. There seems to be this like common theme where he would double wrap a rope around the victim's neck and tape her eyes shut.
Oh my god.
So this is something that happened more than once, so it became like his calling card.
Speaking of ants, I feel like fire ants would be a good solution to this problem.
Okay. I think if we can bridge the fire ants and get them to cooperate and go after serial rapists.
I think we dig a deep hole, Samantha. We get the serial rapist. We get some honey. We get some fire ants. You see where I'm going?
I do.
And then maybe just after the ants do their part, we just fill in the hole. That's what I'm thinking right now.
I'm not fine with it.
I'm not advocating for that because obviously that would be violent.
If that were to behavior. Just happen to a serial rapist,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. I think that I would be fitting, it's poetic even.
Okay. So yeah, you can imagine what happened when rope and tape is involved and
so grim.
Yeah. Within a few months, there was a fourth victim. Each of these victims who were not killed, they were surviving victims, they described the rapist as a short, stocky man in his mid-30s who had a mustache.
The worst 4 months, mustache.
It's a bad mustache.
It doesn't get aimed, obviously.
No, it's a dirtbag. So 4 months pass. Then a fifth victim in a secluded location in Amherst, New York, is attacked. Thomas Gould of the Amherst Police Department was one of the first investigators to arrive on the scene. He describes the rope around her neck wrapped twice. Apparently the man lifted her over the fence and took her into a wooded area, at which point he tied her up, did the tape over the eyes thing, and sexually assaulted her. So she also describes the man as stocky, black hair, black mustache, and two additional victims were also attacked in Amherst. And in each one, he does this rope around the neck thing. So it's like very clearly the same person over and over again.
It's so creepy because you absolutely would think you're gonna die.
I mean, and he strangles them. And I think the sixth or seventh victim went unconscious. Yeah. And
that's
then
just too good for this guy.
Right. So there was another victim. I don't remember which number this was, but this is where things get even worse. So this woman was found an hour later after she was attacked, still unconscious. Double wrapped marks on her neck told police who they were dealing with. But unfortunately, this time was different. This time he nearly killed his victim. So he's escalating, right? So he mm-hmm. strangles this woman with a rope until she's unconscious. She's found still unconscious. Nearly dead. This was 22-year-old Linda Yalim. She was a student at the University of Buffalo when she crossed paths with the serial rapist. Linda was, okay, the seventh known victim, and she was the first to ultimately die. So she was left in the woods with her mouth and nose taped tight with duct tape. They believe that this was a premeditated murder, that he planned to kill her when he grabbed her that day. He put the tape over her mouth and nose, so there was no way that she was going to survive.
Do you think manufacturers of duct tape are resentful of being associated with horrible, violent crimes?
Probably, yeah. Whoever invented it, probably. I'm sure they don't want their invention associated with that.
They're like, no, I really did make it to repair ducts. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
This is off use.
So after Linda's murder, the attack stopped. Authorities wondered if the suspect moved, had gone to prison, or perhaps even died. But then 4 years later, a 14-year-old girl was attacked in Buffalo in the same way. So the update, so they're obviously searching for this guy. The update is that he was found. So unfortunately, it did take 20 years to catch the so-called bike path rapist. DNA was used. It was matched to samples found at the crime scenes. He was convicted of two murders and sentenced to 75 years in life. What was this guy's name? Altemio Sanchez. He committed two other rapes in the same park where he claimed his first victim. They also discovered that an innocent man was serving 35-year sentence for those two crimes.
Oh my God!
That was Anthony Capozzi, and he was finally set free after serving 21 years behind bars.
No, it's even worse than I thought.
I know. It's horrible.
Wow. Why do we watch this show?
I don't know. I don't know why we have a podcast about it.
Yeah, that's brutal. I'm sorry it took so long. I'm sorry this innocent man got railroaded for crimes he didn't commit by this sicko.
It's horrible. Yeah, this one was awful.
It was really awful. There is a cop mustache in this segment. Look, cops are probably dirtbags. I don't know. We had to draw the line somewhere. But I did name this mustache. It's named after one of my mom's favorite snacks, which is a bacon sanny, which is basically when she takes a bunch of bacon and puts it in between two pieces of toast. So that's the name of the cop mustache. Okay. We have one other super brutal, horrible case to get through, and then we'll be done. All right, so this is an unexplained death. I mean, I think it's sort of explained, but I guess we don't. I would almost call this more of a wanted. We just don't know who. Maybe that's what makes it an unexplained death. I don't even know anymore. So shortly before 2 p.m. on July 31st, 1986, the body of 19-year-old, so young, Keith Warren was found hanging from a tree in a wooded area near his home in Silver Spring, Maryland. And of course, because this is the United States and someone is found hanging, you're going, is this kid white? No, of course not.
Do the cops claim it was a suicide?
Yes, of course. Anyway, so this is a young black man who is about to start college in like a month. He was loved by his friends and family and well-respected within his community and was not, not considered suicidal or whatever. From the get-go, there are so many things about this that are really fucking suspicious, and you would have to be a real hardened racist or just wacko to be watching this and go, yep, that guy committed suicide, because there's just like,
no. It's very clearly like, there's no way.
Part of the problem is the tree that he is found hanging from is like really small. I don't know why someone picked this tree, but it essentially was like falling over from his weight. Like, so the rope is actually tied around the base of a bigger tree and then slip knotted through that some other tree. It's like a very confusing rope setup.
That you would never do if you were killing yourself.
Nope. No one has ever set that up to kill themselves ever. The authorities ruled it a suicide based on only a brief visual inspection from the coroner. No autopsy was performed. No investigation was done, and the body was just sent off to a funeral home that, by the way, the family did not pick. The, like, police picked which funeral home it was sent to. The body was literally never sent to a morgue. There was also several hours in between the body being found and his family being notified. It's just, like, every fucking suspicious thing possible is in this case. It's...
Yeah, everything.
His family... specifically his mother Mary received a bag of his personal effects that had been found with the body. This included some cassette tapes, a jacket, and a specific pair of brown boots that he very frequently wore. It was his mother explains that seeing these boots is like when it hit her that her son really was dead. Like, oh, this really must be my son because he never went anywhere without these boots. So at first the family accepts the police ruling that he had committed suicide. It's a tragic, it's horrible, they didn't see it coming, but you know, you gotta move on. But as time progressed, several suspicious occurrences happened before and after his death that made the family suspect that he might have been murdered. I feel like I would have suspected that immediately, but I'm just a really suspicious bitch, so... they heard from family friends that there had been several, quote, suspicious characters that were looking for Keith before his death. One was a man named Mark Finley, who was like telling people he needed to find him without explanation. One was like this whole carload of black teens. They weren't people his family knew. I don't know if that's like in and of itself suspicious. His family thinks it's weird that they were like not people he hung out with, but also seems like very frantic to find him. It does probably mean something. I don't know what. This Mark Finley guy in particular seemed very concerned with finding him like right away. And we hear from Keith's friend, Rodney Kendall, that was like, I don't understand why you're looking for him. Like, you guys are not friends. Like, why could you possibly need to talk to him? They were also not people from his neighborhood. I'm not sure if they went to his school. And like the only time his sister can remember Keith and Mark like being in the same place, actually they had gotten into a fight. So like, why? Yeah. Like, what's up? Okay. There's no reason for him to commit suicide. That to me is less suspicious than the like setup and I don't know, just this country. So, but again, there was just like no warning signs about it. He was about to go to college and like start his whole life. At one point, his friend Rodney takes the mom, Mary, to the site where Keith's body was found because she had not been there. And he was like, I think you need to see that this is like tree is like, it's a fucking sapling. Like, it's a tiny little tree. If what they're showing in the show is even close. I mean, it's probably not the same tree, but it's like very little, right?
In the woods, like to choose that tree. Like,
yeah, I don't even get why murderers would choose it. It's very odd to me. But anyway, they go into the woods so that Rodney can show Mary, like, this is the tree your son was found hanging from. Like, it just seems suspicious to me. Only when they get there, the tree has been cut down. So there's not even that little sapling. There's just, like, the trunk of a little tree. And
even more suspicious.
This freaks Mary out. She thinks someone's like might be trying to cover their tracks or whatever. So she calls the police and is like, well, you know, what do you make of this? They are apparently extremely rude to her, tell her that she is like no business calling or whatever, and that the police cut down that tree because it's evidence. And she's like, that's weird because you never investigated my son's death and I keep being told this case is closed. So what exactly are you gathering evidence for?
Right.
There's not an answer to that. At this point, I think Mary begins to no longer trust the police. And people in her neighborhood suggest that she gets a private detective. It's also when she starts a letter writing campaign, begging people higher up to look into her son's death because it is suspicious. After being stonewalled by the police for the next 6 years, this is really sad too. So she receives a shocking envelope on May 9th, 1992, which was Keith's birthday.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. He would have been 25. And this envelope contained what were apparently official crime scene photos of the crime scene, all showing the way that Keith was hanging and like how the ropes were around his neck and stuff. Obviously, this is extremely shocking. Nobody wants to find photos of their dead son. But she forces herself to look at the photos and immediately is like, this is not consistent with what I've been told at all.
No.
This is very weird and I do not understand what's happening, but he is not wearing his own clothes. He is wearing clothes that are like way too big for him that he did not own. And something that was very easy to point out in the photographs, Unsolved Mysteries shows you not like the whole photographs, but like parts of them. Is that he's not wearing those brown boots, right? He had these boots that he was always wearing, that his whole family like associated Keith with these brown boots, right? He's wearing white sneakers in these photos. And
his sister says he didn't even own a pair of white sneakers.
Right. And there are definitely guys that own white sneakers and guys that don't. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there are people that look at a white sneaker and go, wow, that is not practical. That is going to get marked up in 5 seconds. And there are people that are like, wow, these look really fresh. I'm going to take good care of them. Whatever, right? Keith was not a white sneaker guy. He didn't own white sneakers. And I trust his family to know that he wouldn't have white sneakers. Was he stripped? Like, I don't understand why he would end up in these other clothes. Because at some point, he's
weird.
He's back in his clothes for other crime scene photos. But these, like, initial maybe they're taken first. I'm not even really sure. For some reason, he's not wearing his clothes. Which makes
bizarre.
Makes me think that he is stripped for some reason. But, like, where the fuck were his clothes? And, like, why was
it? Clothes are these. And if these are official photos, but, like, in different official photos, he's wearing different clothes, it implies that he was, at some point, someone official put different clothes on him.
It's very weird and it's extremely creepy. So I think actually it's at this point where people are like, you have got to get a private investigator because the police are not telling you everything. So the private investigator looks at these photos. They are apparently official crime scene photos that can be verified. This guy, Joe, who's the private investigator, also notices that in the photos on his back are like little bits of dried leaf. So that suggests that he didn't walk up to the tree and hang himself. None of you ever thought that he did that. But that he was lying down.
Yeah.
Or his body was lying down. And then someone is hoisting him up with this rope contraption. And that's why leaves are on his back.
Which, let's be real. It looks like a rope contraption that you would use to hoist someone up. Like,
yes, there's no reason if you are just dangling from a rope until your neck snaps or until you can't get any oxygen anymore. Like, you don't need this hoist thing. You don't need to pull up something heavy. You're jumping off something or whatever, which, by the way,
a pulley system
isn't there. It's not like there's a chair or whatever. There's not a thing he jumped off of to hang himself. There's this weird pulley thing to lift up a heavy other person. Oh, it's so frustrating. I really hate this country. Anyway, So the private investigator definitely doesn't think he committed suicide. And he's kind of like, I mean, just look at it. We hear from reporter Del Walters. He has a very like fancy mustache that I called murder mystery theme party. And I think that really does paint an image. So this guy, Dell, points out that the police continue to claim that there are logical explanations for everything. And then he's like,
they don't give a logical explanation.
He's like, they keep saying there's logical explanations, but I have yet to hear one. And that's a very good line. It's at this point that Keith's body is finally exhumed for an autopsy, which had not been done initially because the body just got rushed off to a funeral home and the family didn't know that they should be suspicious. We hear from a pathologist who tells us that the claim of suicide is, quote, not medically not supportable, which means there's like nothing that would suggest suicide from looking at the body, but actually there's stuff that suggests the opposite. And so what's that? The toxicology reports come back, and there are several chemicals in deadly amounts found in his body. These are things normally found in glue or solvents.
Yeah.
It appeared that he had been murdered, though some medical examiners claimed that the chemicals found in the body were from the embalming process. However, we hear from this pathologist saying that the original medical examiner did not mention these substances. The embalmer used an embalming fluid that does not have all of these substances. So that explanation doesn't actually explain why every toxic chemical is in his body. The private investigator is like, look, people are trying to say that he went to a party, he took these drugs or chemicals to get high, he accidentally died, and then people freaked out and made it look like he committed suicide. But there's no evidence to support that. There's no one like seeing him at a party. He wasn't known to do drugs. He wasn't like sniffing glue. But more importantly, if he had voluntarily ingested these hazardous chemicals, he would have just died. He wouldn't have had time to go make this rope course and hoist himself up. Like, he would just have keeled over dead. They were in really high amounts. So it completely contradicts the suicide theory. Because he would have died very quickly. Okay, strangely enough, or perhaps not strange at all, the one person who might have been able to answer questions ended up dead as well, also under suspicious circumstances. This is that guy Mark Finley, who like was a little too eager to find Keith right before he died. Also, when Mary got that horrible package or letter that had those photos in it, there was a note that said, "Mrs. Warren, don't worry, Mark Finley will be next."
Okay.
Soon afterwards, Mark contacted Mary and said that he needed to unload something, that there was something very important that he needed to tell her and like essentially get off his chest. However, he never gets in contact with her again, and a month later, he's dead. How is he dead? Well, the official report is that he died in a freak bike accident after hitting the curb with his bike. Except that the ambulance crew were quick to point out that the fatal injuries on his body did not line up with that story. And it looked a lot more to them like he was repeatedly beat with a baseball bat.
Those two things look very similar. Falling off your bike or getting beat with a bat.
Or perhaps that he was struck with a car. But certainly not that he just fell off his bike in the woods, which probably wouldn't be fatal.
Police are claiming.
Yeah. So obviously, it is believed that both men may have been murdered. What happened to Keith? The family wants to have answers. That's pretty much the end of the segment. It ends with Mary, Keith's mom, asking, "What is it the system does not want me to know about my child's life or death?" Because even if you can buy that this is somehow accidental, there is a level of cover up here. I mean, I don't think that at all. I think he was murdered, and I would suspect that it is a hate crime. But at least, at the very least, someone knows something that they're not sharing. Unfortunately, this is unsolved.
No, don't tell me that.
I know. Mary died in 2009 without ever learning the truth about her son's death. So Sherry still considers the search. In August 2014, it was confirmed by the Montgomery County, Maryland Police Department, the investigating officer used hearsay from an unknown, undocumented, and unrelated source to classify Keith Warren's death as suicide at the time the body was found. So they just took someone's word for it, is what they're claiming. The investigative data used the word suicide determination to justify sending the body to a funeral home of his choice and having no autopsy performed. I mean, look, this is either a cop or this is like the son of a cop. Like, there's a reason.
Or the KKK and the...
There's, you like...
know, you know that they're...
This is like the sheriff's nephew or something. Like, someone who is connected got this covered up. I don't... It's just suspicious as hell. And it's extremely sad. And poor fucking Keith and poor his whole family. And, like, you know.
Well, and since like no investigation was done, there's no evidence. There's so no it's not evidence. Like you can even there's go back and like test DNA, right? Like now, like looking back on it, we can say, yeah, this was suspicious. We're going to reinvestigate, but reinvestigate how? Unless someone confesses, there's, you know, and nothing to go off of.
They fucking killed the friend who knew, or not friend, guy who knew something. Like he got silenced too. So. And I, you know, you don't know if those kids in the whole car of kids, like, did they actually know anything? Did they just happen? Were they like trying to warn him? I don't know. I hate it. I also feel like his family had not always lived in this area. They had moved there, you know, a while ago, maybe like 8 years ago. But it does sort of suggest to me that they don't have like the sort of deep connections to know, like, oh, that guy is the sheriff's nephew. Or you know what I mean? Like, they don't have those sort of like deep roots in the area to like know who to be suspicious of, or like know who would have the power to get things covered up or whatever. They're just not connected in that way. So I hate it so much. But and that's where we end on that great, delightful note. Let's rate this horrible episode.
Okay. Mysteriousness.
It's mysterious.
I mean, particularly Keith's. I mean, that's mysterious. I don't know that the comedy store is all that mysterious, but it's technically unsolved.
Are ghosts putting on comedy shows at the comedy store? I would like to know. How do you lose your sense of humor when you die? Does it change, maybe? Do you see things in a different way? Different things are funny. There's questions.
Probably.
There.
Probably. Yeah, there's mysteries for sure.
For a while, we didn't know where this serial rapist was and if he was being devoured by fire ants.
Yeah.
So that was a mystery also.
Indeed. So what is that, a thumbs up for mysteriousness?
Sure. Fine. Yeah.
Okay. Reenactments.
They were fine. They were not notable, I think.
They were okay.
We got some ghosty reenactments in your first mystery, but they weren't funny. They're not really that. It's just like see through people in 40s clothes walking through doors. Like, they weren't doing anything really wacky, so that's unfortunate.
It wasn't all that wacky. I agree. I'm gonna say thumbs down for reenactments. Or sideways. Sure. They're meh. I don't know, they're mid.
Let's say thumbs down, because they should have been better. They should have tried harder.
Fair enough. We should hold unsolved mysteries to a higher standard.
Yeah.
And I feel like fashion was also like meh. As well. I don't know that anything stood out.
No, that one guy's mustache, the reporter Dell, that was really the only thing that stood out for me. I think we hear very briefly from a woman in like a yellow and black gingham suit thing. That's kind of nice, but it's so brief. So yeah, I'm gonna say a thumbs down. But by this point, we're in like, what are we, like 96 or something? It's just not what it was, you know.
No, I agree. I agree. Thumbs down.
Nobody's wearing their best Delia catalog looks to come on Unsolved Mysteries for some reason. So.
What about Robert Stack? He had some good lines, but not in it. He wasn't really in it a lot, other than the very beginning.
No.
So thumbs down. How do you rate this episode? I honestly didn't like it all that much. I mean, there were some interesting cases, but
I think
there's like four mysteries. There was an unnecessary update.
The update is so long that I think it really hurts the episode. Keith's case is definitely worth talking about, but it's really fucking sad. It's a sad note to end on. I don't like the way the episode is structured. So we get like two very light mysteries. Like, are there ghosts at the comedy club? Will this woman find someone who really helped her? Right? Like, you're like, oh, nice tales. Then we get a really unnecessary long update. And then it's like, oh, horrible, heart-wrenching shit. That the world's terrible. So I'm going to say two. I didn't like this one. I don't want to watch it again. I hope the people responsible for Keith's death or knew things about Keith's death. Like, I hope a piano somehow falls on them while they're walking down the street. Like, I hope they are no longer among us. Clearly some of the worst people ever.
Agreed. Yeah, I think a two is justified for this one.
Yeah, it's just, it's not good. It needed more Robert Stack. It needed more flair. It needed more synth. I don't know. It's lackluster.
Yeah. Agreed. Do you have, I feel like I already gave my found love at the beginning, the walk the distance app. Do you have a found love?
I really do not, because my life lately has been insomnia and minor health problems. Like, there's very little else.
It's okay. Join me on Walk the Distance and just try and hang in there, I guess, is our recommendation.
I found love is when both of my eyes open correctly. That's really great. I love that. Being able to sleep at night. Wow. What a joy. That's something we should not take for granted. Yes. You know, stuff like that. I like not being in pain. I would consider that a...
Yeah. Yeah. I really hope things turn around.
Yes. Thank you. I'm hanging in there. It's, you know... January is going to January. It's just been a very long month. I feel like I felt every second of it, and I am ready for it to be done.
I am too. I hear you. Well, we will catch you all next time then. You should follow us on the few social medias we're still on.
Just come to our Facebook. Look, just suck it up. Restart that Facebook account or whatever and come to our Facebook group, because that's where the quality memes are going to be. That's where you can interact with the rest of the five, you know. Like, if you actually want to be vaguely connected to what's going on here, that's where you need to be.
Yeah, no, completely. If you want some extra content from us, I know we only release episodes fortnightly. You can cough up a dollar and you'll get over, I can say now that we have over 70 bonus episodes on Patreon, patreon.com/perhaps it's you. Our episode this month, which may or may not be out before this, probably it will, is on the X-Files. We're doing another X-Files episode. Squeeze.
You're welcome, everyone. We're talking about when you like to wiggle and eat livers, as we all do.
Yeah.
I think I found something. I tried to spoil it in this episode and it didn't work, but I think I found something like extra good for upcoming Patreon content that I will actually not spoil, but I'm looking forward to it.
You should definitely give us a dollar, because I think next month's content is going to be lit.
It's going to be wild. Really
insane. I really can't wait to talk about it with you. It's going to be very fun. But we have so much content to choose from, and we have a very good variety, and you should definitely check it out. And it's only a dollar. It's the best deal in town.
Totally.
What else do we have to plug? Send us your spooky stories. If you saw a ghost at the Comedy Store, you need to send us your story. Absolutely. Or if any, you had any other paranormal encounters or anything, any kind of hot gossip you want to share, I'll pretend I'm a court reporter.
Yeah.
Email it to us. Perhaps it's you podcast at gmail.com. We won't respond because we don't read them until the end of the season. So it's going to be a while. But just trust us that we've received your email and we will read it on our listener stories finale episode at the end of season 8.
Send it in.
We don't have that many, so please send them to us. We would love to read your stories on the show.
I have not gotten very far on our next zine, so if you also wanted to send in something for that, you still could. Perhaps it's you, podcast@gmail.com. I think that's pretty much it.
We'll talk to you in another 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm going to go get some sleep now. Maybe pet some dogs.
I'm going to make a new salad since my dog stole mine.
Yeah, everybody, a dog stole Samantha's salad while we were recording. So don't think that this gets made without hardships, okay?
This episode has been a struggle. I'm sorry.
It really has.
Salad. I have one leaf left.
The universe did not want us to make this episode, but we persevered. So goodbye, everybody, and we'll talk at you later. Bye.